The 10th Annual Women of Wisdom Conference at Seattle's Unity Church had the usual New Age suspects, like author Shakti Gawain and others. One surprising presenter did catch my eye. Anne Waldman, the internationally known poet, teacher, editor, and co-founder of the Jack Kerouac School of Disembodied Poetics at Naropa University in Boulder, Colorado. Then upon reading her latest book, Vow to Poetry, Essays, Interviews, and Manifestos, I see that she says, quote, "I believe that feminine energy is in the ascendant in this culture." Today we talk to her about that energy, its implications for the culture, and other provocative statements from her new book, which helps illustrate the famous quotes of poets past that, one, artists are antenna of the race, and two, poets are the unacknowledged legislators of the world. Anne, welcome back to the program. I just have to tell you, the new book is one of the best books on poetics I have read in many, many years. That I've ever read. And that includes Poetics of the New American Poetry and a previous book of yours, the Naropa Disembodied Poetics Anthology. Congratulations. It's very inspiring.
Well, it represents a real history in terms of my own life and work and all the cultural activism and the founding of Naropa's Jack Kerouac School and homages to some of these wonderful wise elders, Ginsberg and William Burroughs, of course. And I felt it was a good teaching book. I really see it as a book for my students, as I say in the introduction, you know, dedicated to the past, the present, and these students to come.
Yeah.
And I'm very obsessed right now with lineage and legacy and how important it is for writers of my generation to articulate their poetics, to give some of the history as they've lived it, really, and make that available, and also explicate some of the conditions out of which the poetry comes. And in my case, of course, the political poetry and the performance poetry. And so it was an interesting task. It was very painful what there wasn't room for. And, and then once I got it together, I thought, there's so much more to say and there's so much more to write. So I hope I'll do more of this. So there's a little subsequent pamphlet that's come out with several manifestos written since the events of September when I was in residency in Italy. So I'm happy about that. And it's the same kind of, this is subtitled Manifestos, his essays and interviews, but the manifesto form seems really important right now.
Yeah, absolutely. How did you get involved in the Women of Wisdom Conference? I saw you on the publicity and I thought, wow, the answer, this
well,
is cool.
Well, Sonia Lee, who's one of the active teachers and has certainly helped develop that project over the years, suggested to the folk who organize it that after hearing me read here through the SPLAB activities, and Sonia was in my workshop when I was last in the area, thought that this would work for the Women of Wisdom, that there was something that I had to offer there that fit in with the dynamics and vision of that gathering. So I'll be teaching a 2-day workshop, 9 to 4:30, tomorrow and Friday. And
by the time this airs, it'll be history. So, but that's great that you're teaching there. I think it's outstanding, and I could go into that, but I don't want to talk about the Women of Wisdom. I think it's a wonderful conference, and I hope it continues for many years.
Yeah, it's been 10 years now.
Yeah, that's just amazing. Now, there is a short piece in the book called Oppositional Poetics, and let me see here. If my notes are correct, it's on page 51. So this is a nice short essay, this will give anyone listening a sense of where you're coming from, at least one view of where you come
from.
Good,
yeah, I agree. Oppositional Poetics, and it opens with a few lines from Holderlin's poem Bread and Wine. What is the use of poets in a bereft time? How do we now navigate a new chaos of possibility? Our languages and investigations of utopias, prehistoric caves, history's revision from a people's point of view, i.e. the invasion of Turtle Island. These were the violent beginnings of an intricate system of technology, business, politics, and culture that would dominate the world for the next 5 centuries. how to navigate the Horbans or Holocausts in memory, out of memory, and to come. Is it conceivable, dare we say, oppositional is a spiritual poetics? How to navigate mythological poetic wars, planetary finitude, unfathomable sickness, starvation, and death? How to navigate the new savage state? As writers, what's the task? More letters to immured powermongers? New hope in a fresh, less cynical administration? Putting our energy into a candidate? Total candor? Total renunciation? The Crips and Bloods, the newspapers say, orchestrate a kind of truce after the L.A. insurrection. People to people we are made. My best friend and I argue about that word, insurrection. Want to get the facts straight? Is it simply a frustration, a looting? You think riot is a better nomer? Some of us think since January 17th, 1990, everything's markedly different. My niece had communist smeared across her high school locker room for refusing to salute the flag during Desert Storm. No, never sleep. You must go against the grain for the benefit of others. As the muse said to Hilda Doolittle, write, write, or die.
You know, when I hear you read again, it's like I'm back in that universe. Like some people experience a fine wine, you know, or something like that. It's amazing because I'm, you know, back at the
splab. Well, this is the voice that's in my head all the time.
Wow. Well, lucky you.
I don't know about that.
I guess. What happened January 17th, 1990?
That was the beginning of the Gulf War. Of course, we're back there again, which is why this piece still feels, you know, very relevant. But this sense of a new kind of war, you know, with the surgical striking and the demonization of Saddam Hussein. I mean, I think we're going to be back in there again. Yeah. And the fact that, you know, very few American lives were lost, although the illnesses out of that conflict, the chemical.
The Gulf War syndrome.
Gulf War syndrome.
And you point out...
And the number of people who died, of course, in that country, and died subsequently because of
sanctions
and all that. So it's it's an intense reality that we have not even, that many of the most of the American citizens don't really know what the facts are. It was very hard to get information. It was not, as you remember, the Pentagon was controlling things just as they are now.
They learned in Vietnam.
Yes.
Yeah, they did.
Yeah.